everybody, and welcome to another edition of History After Hours. My name is Kevin Pumphrey, and with me, like normal, is Mr. Ron Franklin and Mr. Jeremy Nixon. We are three history teachers from Lakeside High School in beautiful Hot Springs, Arkansas. And today we are recording our very first live podcast at Collective Coffee in downtown Hot Springs since the pandemic hit. So this is a very important moment for our podcast. We are recording this on Thursday, September 1st, 2022, and it's been a long time coming. We had a room full of students who were asking great questions. It was nice to be back covering all the crazy topics that a student might ask. And so, we had a really great time. We hope you guys enjoy the podcast. This is our first episode from our new season, which is, can you believe it, season 8. So, we hope you enjoy the podcast.
Hello, everybody. We are History After Hours, and we're back. We're back at Collective Coffee, the first live podcast in quite some time since that virus thing flew through. But we're back, and we are, for the first time in a couple years, looking at a room full of students. They have some questions that they've been thinking about for 2 years, and they're ready to unload them on us, and it's going to blow our mind. So, with our first question,
no
state your name and
None
what you got.
No pressure at all on you, too. Like, this question
no
has to be, like,
low intensity.
Drum roll, please.
Yeah, so, intensity, no pressure at all.
Only the first one in 2 years.
Go.
Okay, I'm Ellie Uldrick. So a lot of teachers have been leaving the work field. So I'm curious, why are y'all still here?
We ask ourselves that every day. No.
Insanity? I plead insanity?
I think we're all different. I think we all teach for different reasons. I also, it depends on your experiences. I grew up on a farm, so teaching doesn't seem that hard to me. I know what manual labor and the sun does to people, and roofing. So as far as a hard job, it's not physically hard. So I enjoy that, being in the air conditioner. And really, I think we all are on the same page that, you know, teaching can be difficult. Students can be difficult. Things can happen. Parents might not support what you're doing or whatever. But as long as we can do in our classroom what we feel is best, I think we're going to be teaching. If somebody comes in and tells us what to say and how to teach, and all, that's when we can find something different.
Well, yeah. Let's say this, too. If somebody comes in, the three of us together we're a pretty formidable group to come at. So if you're going to try to direct us, like, you better know your stuff, because I said this a while ago. Like, we know what we're talking about, and we know how to teach this. We've been doing it. We're extremely professional at what we do. We take it extremely seriously. And so if you're going to come criticize us, you're going to come, I mean, we'll listen to you, but if you are off your game at all, we're fixing to snap back on you. So number one, lock shields and defend, right? That hasn't happened. Like, we've been really fortunate to work in a place. This goes back to what you're asking. One of the reasons that we keep doing this is that we work with a school district that has been extremely supportive of what we do and how we do it. Like, they're very complimentary of us. We get, I don't want to say accommodations. What am I trying to say? Accolades. Like,
yeah,
they pat us on the back a lot, you know. So that helps, you know. And the other thing for me is the people that I teach with. Like,
yeah.
We've formed up a really strong team. The department is getting stronger and stronger. And if it wasn't for the support and really the sort of the professional push that I get from these two guys, it might make a difference in where I decided to be, you know, or just if I decided to stay in the field.
And this is the same for me. It's the exact same. You know, I and all of us actually basically came from different backgrounds and different fields, and we do this because we love it. And we do this because we're in a community that supports each other. And, I mean, we've said it before, but we'll put our department up against anybody in the state. And I think that's part of it, too, that we have a lot of mutual respect for each other. And we, I mean, or at least I am not trying to speak for everybody, but I enjoy being there every day and seeing these guys and talking to them in the hall and seeing you guys and talking and just learning from each other. So that's why
I do
it.
Well, let's dig a little deeper on that, though, since that was a pretty good question, by the way. Do not disappoint.
Bravo.
I'll give you that, so bravo. Why do you think so many people are choosing at this point to get? You think it's COVID related or you think there's something else going on?
I think it's both. I think it's money, money, money.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also the challenges that have arisen from COVID. I mean, y'all know, COVID gave you a lot of excuses. And a lot of students want to keep those excuses rolling. And a lot of administrators want to keep those excuses rolling. And it makes it even harder for a teacher to teach. We haven't seen that this year. I think this has been a great start to a year. Mm-hmm. It feels like normal. But I think a lot of teachers are... Also, COVID opened up staying at home working, which we didn't have before. I think a lot of teachers, and plus, by the way, we've got, you know, most teachers have several degrees. We're highly educated. We can get another job. And if we could stay home and do it and not have to deal with all the craziness, I mean, I think the teachers that are leaving the profession, they might not love it, or they're not passionate about their subject as much.
Or maybe they don't feel supported, like I just said, we do.
Right. If they start messing with the way I do my class, then that's when I'll jet. And
same.
And a lot of teachers might have had that happen. So.
Yeah.
Nixon, any thoughts on people bailing, or you got anything to add?
There are a lot of things we could say. The amount of work, the intensity of it, the more responsibilities in COVID, mental health, physical health. But I really do think it is about support at the end of the day and loving what you do.
Some people that I know who have decided to not do this anymore, there was a certain amount of disillusionment that came over the past few years. And it's like, I can't get through it. I mean, I know that students have been through a lot, and I'm not downplaying what you've done at all, but you have a unique perspective on the receiving end of all this. To try to teach through what we've just been through, like, I'm just going to go ahead and be real honest with you. Like, it was dark at times.
Terrible.
It was hard to try to get things worked out. How are we going to reach the kids that we need to do, especially for the kids that are at home? Are they listening? Are they not? Are we reaching them? Are they not? Are they going to do their work? Are they cheating the whole time through? Are we actually making any kind of difference at all?
You all were cheating the whole time.
I said if, but assumption. Yeah, we know there was a lot
when
of
when you were cheating.
There was actually even a black market on that for like essays and things like, well, I'll pay you to do.
Yeah, we knew that.
It happened. But at the same time, from our side, like the whole reason we give you things to do is so that you will be a better person on the other side of that thing. And if you don't do it, then you've missed. And so, and that, again, that give and take is part of why we do what we do, to see you get it. We know what we're talking about. We need you to know it too, because you're going to be the people who carry that torch forward. And if we're not able to pass that along, then that's where that disillusionment comes from. Like, we're just like, geez, is it worth it? I mean, it is, but it was hard. It was so freaking hard. And I know a lot of people went through depression. I know students went through it, but I'm telling you, educators did too. And some still do, you know, like, it's, I'm glad we're coming out the other side. I hope it continues.
And part of it's selfish. Like, I don't want to be 80 and in a system that you're running and I think you're a moron. So I really do want, you know, you guys to be prepared.
All right. Very good. Step on up.
My name is Delaney. And my question is Kiss, Marry, Kill, Genghis Khan, Columbus, and Stalin.
Is there a question mark there?
Are you calling us names? What are you doing?
Why would you marry Genghis Khan? He cheats.
What was the first? What's the question? I didn't catch it. I just heard a list of names, but...
Kiss, marry, kill.
I don't know what that means.
Do you kiss them? Do you marry them? Do you kill them?
Okay, see, I'm older than these guys. I don't know what you guys are talking. Kiss, marry, kill. Okay, gotcha.
He thought that was somebody's name. Kiss Mary. Who's she?
Kiss Mary. Kill.
You can't. You killed her.
That's a dangerous chick right there.
So you got to pick one for each.
Think twice about dating him. All right. So Genghis Khan, Stalin. Who was the other one?
Columbus.
Columbus. Oh, my God.
Okay, no, I think you killed Genghis Khan.
You got to kiss Stalin. Their most recent one. He probably has less diseases. He's modern age.
Good point. Good point.
He's not carrying the plague.
There was medicine. Yeah.
I don't know. I've always had a thing for Genghis Khan, though. I think he gets a bad rap.
Yeah.
I think that he always gets.
But
you know,
there's
people
a
go,
statistical
no,
chance you're related to him.
Guy. No, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just the bad boy in me. I want to be. No, I don't know what the.
You marry Genghis Khan, you get the empire, right?
Ooh,
you inherit the whole empire. You kiss Stalin, so you don't get
you're
the plague.
You're a gold digger. Look at you.
She give me money when I'm in need. Sorry.
All right. We may have to give that a little more thought. That's gonna.
They
only
go crazy, Kanye.
I'm gonna wake up in the middle of the night going, "No, you should have spent Columbus." No. I don't know, man. I don't know. All right. Next.
Hi, my name's Sasha Thomas. I'm from ASMSA, so I don't get extra
credit
man, for this.
Hey, man, welcome. Yeah. No. I know some people over there. Tell them, Mr. Parker said you get extra credit. You tell them I said.
In a more history-geared question, Grigori Rasputin was killed in a very mysterious way, very mystical, kind of... The story is kind of garbled over time. What do y'all think the true story of how he's died was? Garbled. What do you think is fact from fiction?
Oy.
Yeah. We're only starting with like the four of the most notorious people in history.
Rasputin. Rasputin.
Well, he heard that song and he died.
It's weird that they made a disco song out of that moment. Have you ever thought about that? It's just, you guys know the Just Dance thing, right? You've heard this song. Yeah. So, but if you really listen to the lyrics on that, like, it's telling the story best we kind of know that it happened. But instead, you put a disco thump to it, and it's just kind of a weird thing to do. Boy.
Okay, I'm not a world
really
history
happened?
Guy.
Yeah, no,
but
go ahead. Yeah,
from
go ahead.
My knowledge of this, I know he was poisoned, shot, stabbed, whatever. But apparently, I remember reading the official cause that they released was he actually drowned.
Drowned.
Yeah.
So he survived all that other stuff.
Okay, right. So according to the guys who murdered him... Because they admitted to what they like. All right, so we brought him in, and then we were going to poison the guy because we know that he liked a lot of food and drink. And we arsenic in everything, you know, an ounce of that will kill three elephants. But this guy, for some reason, was able to, like, eat sweets and chug it down. And anyway, so he didn't die. And he should have. He should have at least been sick to his stomach. Like, you should have asked for a Tums or something. But then they're like, oh, well, he didn't die, so we have to, like, stab him. So they stabbed him. That didn't kill him. So they shot him. That didn't kill him. So they stabbed him again. And then they, like, mutilate him at some point, apparently, from what they said, and then they wrapped him up, threw him in the river, and apparently after all of that, he like drowned. They found water in his lungs. So I don't know. So he claimed to be like the superhuman, like faith healer, like God is in me and I will fix, you know, whatever. And so now you gotta wonder, like, is this just the most difficult murder in history? Does he clot well? I mean, what happens, you know? Or was he actually a man of God that they murdered? Oh, no. Because, one of the themes here is as long as Rasputin lives, or if he falls, the empire will fall,
something like that.
And then next thing you know, the Romanovs come tumbling down. I don't know. I don't know. So the truth has to be in there somewhere, I guess. At least we know he drowned for sure. That was on the official record. But after that, that's... I don't know.
It's also a Russian official record.
Yeah, well, right.
He's also in my top five creepiest modern photos.
Definitely.
Just Google a photo. You know, it's 150 years. There's a photo of him, and it's so creepy. John C. Calhoun is pretty creepy. There's some other in the running, but he's top five for sure.
It's all in the eyes.
I know, yeah.
Something weird right there. Hypnotic. All right, ready?
Okay, I'm Natalie Shunk, and... Since you guys claim that you're, honest with us and all that jazz.
Wait a minute. You questioning our...
Pumphrey was shaking his head.
We don't lie to you on purpose.
That's a good thing to say. If we were to say something that wasn't accurate, we didn't mean to do that, right? And if we learn differently, we will correct that. So that's the other thing that's good about us. Okay, but go ahead with your...
Well, I do appreciate
condescending...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean it to be. Do you think that college is, like, actually worth it? Because, I mean, theoretically, we're going into, like, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt. And, I mean, is that really going to benefit us in our future?
It's not worth it for everybody is the, glib answer, sort of. It goes back to sort of the first question, like, what do you really want to do and what are you passionate about? Because, speaking as someone who spent a lot of money on a law degree, practiced for 10 years, and then quit, that wasn't great. So, do I regret it? No. I have my license, I have the degree, I teach what I love. So I don't regret it, but you have to think sensibly about what do I want to do? Am I serious about this? Is it worth the... Because it is an investment. And it has... I mean, the percentage is that college tuition has gone up is just insane. And we need to do something about it. That's a different question. But I don't think there's one answer to yes or no to that.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is figure out the career you want. Follow somebody around who does it to make sure that's the career you want. And then if that requires college, you got to go to college. But if not, don't. I mean, you know, I've got this whole series on stuff you should know. Keeping your debt low is one of the things that can give you freedom in life. If you rack up debt very quickly, then you're married to a job. You've got to have money to make those payments. So, you know, obviously debt is debt. And if you don't have to go to college, I mean, yes, studies still say people who go to college make more money, but that's averaging everything out. That's not for everybody. You know, figure out the career first, make sure that's what you want to do, and then go into, you know, in England and Europe, they have the gap year, which is really beneficial because they don't just dive headfirst into college with their friends. They spend a year if they can. And that makes a difference because we have a culture in America where you graduate from high school and all of you and your friends just go right into college and you feel that peer pressure. I mean, if you can, you know, if it's, of course your parents are going to help make these decisions too, but eventually it's your career. You've got to figure it out. I just wouldn't dive blindly into college these days.
I would think about, is the debt that you're potentially accruing unmanageable after the fact? Or is it unmanageable debt for you, depending on the career that you are able to get with this education? I'd also say this, be selective in where you might go if you actually are going. Because you can get quality education. It doesn't have to be Ivy League. It doesn't have to cost you that much money. The degree itself can open doors for you. Does it matter whether it comes from this institution that costs, you know, 50% more, or does it come from a state school that costs this much less, but you still, right? I would investigate that too. Like, does this have the programming that I need? Is it going to, you know, but you know, I'm going back to what Humphrey just said. A lot of kids just go, you know, I must go. And I think that we've done a horrible job as an institution, not Lakeside specifically, but just as high schools across America, with this idea that everybody's got to go. I mean, you really need to consider, is that what is going to get you where you want to be in life? Or once you get in, if you realize that this is not for me, then have the sense to back up and get out. Because otherwise you're going to forge in and then you're going to be swallowed up by something that you don't really want to do with all this debt that might be unmanageable, right? You have to play the game, I guess, but know what you want to get out of it before you jump in. Be thoughtful. Don't just go, you know. I think so many people just go. What is it? And I know there's like a tendency to go, we got to go here because it's party school, man. Like, that is wretched. Like, don't fall into that trap. Oh, my God. You know, I mean, the statistics.
Party without going to school.
That's just a complete waste. The statistic, I think, nationwide is 50% of the entering freshmen don't come back for their sophomore year. Like, that's staggering if you really stop and think about it. So they got to back up and figure out what they're going to do, because either they wasted their money or they wasted daddy's money or whatever it is, and then they, you know, because they spent too much time doing other things than what they were really supposed to be there for, and they can't make it and they flush out. Or maybe it was harder than they thought it was going to be, or whatever. There's a myriad of reasons. But you got to know you and what you really want to get out before you take, because it does get real serious real fast. Student loan debt is something, I mean, we've got this relief thing that's in the works, but generally speaking, the debt that you accrue, like, that's, you can't even file bankruptcy and get out of that. It's going to follow you for the rest of your life. Like, it's just, they're just that determined to get that money. So anyway, yeah, that's a great question too. Yeah, thank you.
All right, my name is Joshua Weed. And Mr. Pumphrey, you said earlier today that if you were to have to fight in any conflict, you would pick World War I last. So I'm curious, if you had to fight in any conflict or war, present or past, which would you choose?
If you had to fight?
If you had to fight.
If you were drafted?
I would go with any modern, like Iraq, Afghanistan, just because the likelihood of you coming home is way more. Likelihood of you catching a horrible disease, like Spanish-American War, not many people died, but there's a good chance you're going to catch a disease, yellow fever or whatever. So the more, I'm telling you this, I understand, yeah. With social media, you think we're all going to hell. It's going, everything's horrible. Everybody's shooting everybody. But actually violence is at an all-time low worldwide. And the technology helps bring people home. Obviously, I wouldn't want to be on the other side of that conflict. But if I'm fighting for the USA, I think the most modern thing, I'll do that.
Yeah, I would agree.
You want to be a drone pilot?
Yeah, I want to be in a room 1,000 miles away. We're going to give them freedom from 60,000 feet.
You're playing Nintendo in California while the drone is over there across the ocean. That's probably, that makes more sense than just about anything else. Because a lot of times, if I think about Civil War, for example, the death toll, which is staggering, you know, I mean, a Civil War is, I think we've talked about this in class, you can't win a Civil War because you're fighting against yourself, you're wasting your people, you're wasting your resources, you're destroying your land and infrastructure. It's just nobody really wins that, even if somebody claims to at the end. But more people were killed by the infections and by diseases that were rampant in the camps and things than they did, or starvation, than they did from the bullets that were flying. So, you know, that's probably a great answer. The more modern, I wouldn't go back and slosh through the mud and the crap with everybody else.
Yeah, and my biggest problem with World War One is not so much how horrible it was, which it was horrible, and it's you know, poison gas and machine guns and trench warfare and all that, but it was kind of useless. So you do all that, and then what happens? You know, it just leads you to World War II. So it's also, that's another reason I just despise World War One.
What if you were really sucked into the patriotism? Would it make a difference? We're sitting here 2022 saying this, but if we had lived at that time, you see what I mean? Like, we might have been just caught up in the fervor.
Yeah,
a lot of people were. Like,
especially America.
Whole towns were going into the recruiting stations together. All, come on, boys. The whole graduating class from that year's high school, they all marched down there together. You know, they just kind of get swept up in almost like a mob mentality in a weird way. You know, just everybody's, yeah, we're doing it for home and country. But then when they get there, the reality of, oh, this isn't, the patriotism fades when you get away from the band and the banners and the flags. And when you get out there, when it's just how many things have we read where we're not even fighting people, we're fighting death itself.
Yeah.
How scary is that, man?
Shell shock.
You ever seen any of the videos of people who came back from that war with shell shock? That's what, I mean, we call it PTSD now, but they didn't know what else to call it then. I mean, it's not even mental anguish or just, I'm depressed. These dudes, like, couldn't function. I mean, their synapses weren't firing the right way. They were incapacitated, and yet, I mean, they're living, but they're not, right? And they couldn't get over it. And there weren't therapies to help them get over it. Like, this just, it's horrific, even for the people who survived. I hate that story, actually.
This is also where we invent plastic surgery. I always bring that up because we had the medical technology to keep people alive.
So war is good. Is that what you're saying?
Well, technology does develop in war, for sure.
That is a thing.
But, yeah.
All right, thank you.
Next.
All right, don't hesitate. Come on.
What's up, Joe?
What do you have?
Hey,
what is that?
Sorry, I have to bend down. Everyone that's asked questions is like 5 feet. So I let Nick in on a little insider of this.
Say your name.
I'm Joseph.
There you go.
I go by Joe. But I go by other names in my classes.
All right, don't get carried away.
All right, okay. Anyway, I let Nixon in on this, so I'm starting a podcast, and here I am sitting at a podcast. So I'm going to need from each and every one of you one piece of advice to start a podcast. It's called the No BS Podcast. So there's no theme. It's just whoever we want to bring on the show. So I need three pieces of advice to start this. It's me and my best friend Caleb Alines in a toga costume. It's that one.
So let me think through what you're asking here. Is it, because we could talk about technical difficulties, or we could talk about your ability to no BS your way through. You know, is it like a format where you're going to have people come in and sit and do interview style things, or are you just going to sort of randomly talk off the top of your head on what's going on in the world? Or
yeah, he's going to invite people in for interviews.
Or, you know, do you test the newest vaping devices? I mean, what's happening? What are you doing here? Yeah, I mean, so you kind of have to pick a thing. Is it going to be all inclusive, or are you going to have, like, you know, today we're going to have this segment? I don't know what your plans are. The what now?
The Noke Brothers.
Okay, so that's what you're. So just play it out as it goes. We're just gonna get behind the mic, hit it and go. Yeah, all right. Well,
I think if you want to be successful, you just need to be authentic with whatever. Yeah. I mean, the best podcasts are people who you trust and you think that they're just being themselves. So I think that's a good piece of advice. Just be you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this podcast, because we're teachers and it's associated with Lakeside, you know, we're telling you guys the truth and all that. But we're not 100% ourselves, but we're authentic. I mean, what we're saying is we believe it, I believe. But, I mean, it's still, you know. So I would just say be authentic with whatever you want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't try to be somebody you're not. Like, right, do that, do it well. But you get better as you practice, too. Like, the first few episodes of this, like, he just came to me in the hall one day. He's like, dude, you want to do a podcast? And I was like, I didn't even know what a podcast was at the time. Like, I guess, what is that? Explain it to me. And he's like, no, it's this cool thing, and people talk about stuff. You can learn all kinds of great things, and you listen, you know. And I was like, sure. But we didn't know what we were doing. We borrowed some busted-ass equipment from Slayton, and we had a couple of mics, and we just kind of plugged in, and I think we had a list the first time. What do you want to talk about? And we went through the news, like, okay, we're going to talk about this, da-da-da, check, and then we kind of stumbled through it. But the more we did it, you know,
we stumbled upon this, bringing the students in.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was great.
For years, it was just me and him. And what year is this? Year
8.
So we've been doing it for 8 years. Yeah. So, but we're really doing this for y'all. History After Hours is really not about us anymore. It's about this. It's about trying to have another venue to teach you guys what we know and what we've learned through bitter tears.
That's the other thing, too. Like, when you find something that you go, ooh, I didn't expect that, but this was cool. I like to do that. Like, that's how we got into this scenario. We were like, well, you want to go downtown and have kids come and just sit and see what happens? Like, we had never opened the mic up. Matter of fact, we had a guy from a national park who's not there anymore, but he came and sat in with us a few times. And he was kind of new to the process, but he had heard what we were doing. And he's like, okay, so he's sitting here, basically where Nixon is. And he goes, all right, man, before the show, we're like, what do we do? Is there a script or something? Like, do I need to prepare myself? And I was like, nah, bro, we're ad-libbing this. He goes, dude, that's dangerous. I was like, yeah. Like, that's part of the fun, man. We don't know what's going to be asked. And we just got to react in real time. And that's part of the reason why I like this so much. Just, what are you going to hit me with? Like, we got to, you know.
And before you know it, you're married to Stalin.
And before you know it, yeah, shacking up with Genghis Khan in Columbus. All right. Anyway, so yeah, there you go. All right, come on.
Hey, my name's Atticus Webb, and I wanted to know, what would y'all want as your last meal?
A hot fudge brownie and ice cream has got to be involved. It's my favorite dessert.
You've thought this through.
Yeah, that was quick.
Well, 10 years of lifting weights and watching my diet, I knew what my favorite dessert was.
Uh-huh.
So, mm-hmm. You know, when you starve yourself, you're vanilla ice cream, by the way. Homemade, preferably.
Oh, yeah. I'm a pessimist, but I've never thought about that.
About the last meal?
About my last meal, yeah.
Well, think about it.
I am, but
Is it you going dessert? Or are you going like
maybe a meal or dessert?
Clogging, fatty something you would never.
I'm already dying, so I don't know about that. I may just be desserts. I think so.
Yeah,
just my favorites.
I'm gonna bathe in Jello and not whipped cream. Man. Is that what you're gonna do? Just eat your way through the tub of goo? I don't know. So this is complicated because I'm not planning on dying. So last meal is really not a thing for me. Yeah. We talked this out in class, Simon. Kids are always like sort of weirded out when I say that, but I figured this out when I was a kid. Man, people go, "What's the secret of life?" I'm like, "Not dying. Like that's the secret of life, right there." And so I just choose not to, right? And they go, "Well, you're gonna die. It's gonna happen. You can't avoid that. You don't know that.
Prove it.
Prove that I can't live forever. You can't. It's a nick." Now listen, I understand that the odds are against me. Yeah, I get that. I guess this is a long shot. But I figure I might as well try, you know,
as long as I'm feeling good, I'm gonna get it.
Yeah, just keep on rolling.
So here's the thesis statement. Although everyone up to this point has died, because he's so confident.
Confidence is part of the key.
And he's Lord Franklin. He will live forever.
Yeah. So there. And, you know, if and when it happens, you can come and go, told you. But until then, I'm right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Until I'm actually gone, I'm right. I'm going to live forever. You wait and see.
And he won't hear you anyway. So he won.
Yeah, it won't matter.
You know what's odd I just thought about is most people do share the same last meal coming through an IV. Isn't that dark?
Oh, dude. Like that's...
Sorry. We're all going to have the same last
meal. I was in my dessert happy place, and that's what you just did. Thanks.
Can you put some chocolate in my IV tube? Boo! Please.
Just... All right, better not be ice chips. I'll be pissed off, boy. Yeah. Give me something real. No, not for me. I'm not going. Yeah, I can't. You won't make me go. I am. All right, so.
Last meal, Nixon?
Have I expressed enough how I feel about that? All right, come on.
Hi, I'm Lucille Duke, and I kind of have a two-in-one question.
All right.
So I'm curious as to what you guys will think will end the human race or civilization, and if it'll be like a history repeats itself type thing.
Wait to mess up my live forever scenario.
Humanity is gone.
Damn it. Franklin is going to end the human race. No, I'm kidding.
Just me and the roaches.
I survived crawling out from under a rock.
I've been solid what? Robot. Like, it will be artificial intelligence. I'm sticking with that.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why do you go there? Because of, like, Bezos and...
Yes. On the evil villain straight out of comic books.
Who's worse? Who's the Tesla boy? What's his name?
Musk. Right?
Elon Musk. So, yeah. Who's worse? Elon? Like, as far as super villains go, yeah? Super evil billionaires with all this money to spend, the secret lairs and dudes and, you know, henchmen in jumpsuits or whatever. Like, is it Bezos? Is it Musk? Who is it?
Bezos looks more the part with, like, the Dr. Evil.
Because the shaved head, you got the Lex Luthor thing going on.
Right.
Yeah. Dr. Evil. Oh, no. Putin.
But Musk wants to go to Mars, so, I mean, he's kind of got that going for him.
Mars. Yeah. What if they go to Mars? What if they go to Mars and come back? And they bring some sort of, like, they go, well, we're going to find Martians. Well, what if you just find, like, some freaking Martian bacteria and it comes back and wipes us all out? Like, that's something to really stop and consider. How do you decontaminate a vehicle back from Mars? That's a concern, I guess. Unleash some horrible bacteria on the world.
Once Facebook did the whole, we have AI that they're talking to each other and English was inefficient, so they created their own language and we don't know what they're saying. I was like, nope, that's it. Yep, it's AI. We're over.
Hey, I read a thing the other day where they've got some sort of AI machine that is able to replicate itself.
Yes.
Did you read that?
Yeah.
So that may be going down your Terminator path, you know.
Yeah, I've studied quite a bit
about this. These people watch no movies, or they use them as inspiration. Either way, I'm disturbed.
I will say this, of all the stuff that could, I don't think a virus will do it because there'll be a certain percentage probably immune. I don't think we'll kill each other. There'll be people living in caves. I think it could be history, a big asteroid that we just can't get out of the way of. And then, I mean, what do you do? And then it, like the dinosaurs, it was worldwide. It was global.
Okay, so is that what there's two questions.
I'm not hoping for it.
Two questions in one. Oh, well, that's where I was going. Is this what you think might happen or what you hope will happen? Like, what do you... If there's going to be an end of the world...
If it's going down...
And you can
down,
sort of plan it, like, what would it be? Like, what would you go still asteroid? I hope it's an asteroid.
I hope it lands right on top of
it. This is so strange because I was late because I was getting a haircut. And I just told the lady that we were talking about how bad things have gotten. And I was like, I'm
the lady cutting your hair is like...
Yeah, we're having this conversation. And I'm just like, if it was good enough for the dinosaurs, is it good enough for me? It's time for the giant asteroid.
Quit.
Yeah. So
you don't want to halfway survive.
Like a big one that gets everybody all at once, or a little one that gets everybody slowly.
We've had our chance.
We had a good run,
but it's not as enjoyable, right? I mean, if you want the drama,
the drama will be if we know it days ahead and
haven't you seen Deep Impact?
You
want to
see it coming? The moon splits in half, and all of a sudden
they stand on the beach and watch it come in the tidal waves. It's dramatic.
Okay, all right.
And of course, Musk and Bezos,
they lift off.
They're gone. See? Yeah.
It just seems
with your hopes and dreams.
It just seems too fast. I mean, really, if you're going to talk about end of the world, you need to go like super dark, pain and suffering, and long drawn out. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying.
I think even with AI, they might keep a bunch of us around just in case.
You know, asteroids probably the best answer. It probably is. Wait a minute. There was two parts to that. What was the second part? What was it? Yeah. So yeah, that some sort of cosmic calamity, you know, that makes good sense. Okay.
Hi, my name is Celia Cox, and my question is: with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, what do you think the futures of contraceptive are in both America and in Arkansas?
America and Arkansas, because we're separate. When we secede from the Union. Hold on. What do we think the future of contraceptives are now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned? Okay.
I'm trying to decide how far to back up on this.
Well, let's just make sure everybody knows what the overturning just kicked it back to the states. It didn't do anything else. But although...
Right. So what Roe versus Wade stood on was the right of privacy, which was Griswold versus Connecticut, which is about contraceptives. So theoretically, now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned, there is a concern that all the cases that came after Planned Parenthood versus Griswold versus Connecticut, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself, could be overturned. And so it's uncertain. What I can tell you, though, is that at states that want to prohibit contraceptives or states that want to repeal rights that have been granted under that umbrella term of privacy will start one by one systematically using test cases and laws to restrict those things. And that's how piecemeal that it will go backwards. Because that's how they took down Roe. It's one state at a time chipping away, seeing how far they can go with it. And they got the right court and overturned it. In 50 years, maybe a court overturns the overturning. and we talked about that in AP Gov and what that does to a country and our belief in an independent judiciary. But the best I can say right now is that what will happen is a systematic testing of individual states of what they can do. And it could be contraception. It could be LGBT issues that are also under the right of privacy, such as same-sex marriage and that type of thing.
One of the things that's got some of these folks stirred up, and you may not know this because this doesn't come up very often, is that our birth rate in the United States is at its lowest point in decades. And it fluctuates from time to time, but it's on this downward trend. And you could say, well, it's because of COVID, or it's because of this, or people not getting married as often, or they're choosing to have kids later in life so they have fewer kids, whatever it is. There's lots of different reasons why that might be. But some of these guys, and this is sort of a historical trend too, by the way, if a leader looks at the country and they're like, we must build our country, let's build our, then one of the things they're going to promote is you're going to have to get together and have a lot of kids. And so that's part of what we're seeing as one of the justifications for the attack on contraceptives is that we need more kids because we need more people in the country if we're going to continue to be a country. So there's this interesting logic that they try to throw at. It's their logic. I'm not saying it's valid. I'm saying that's how they use it. But we've seen it before in other countries, in more totalitarian-style countries, as a matter of fact. So if you look, you brought up World War II a while ago. So if you look at, like, Mussolini in Italy, or if you look at, actually, Stalin over in the Soviet Union, or if you look at, we could even go as far as Hitler, or we could look at Kim Jong-un over in North Korea today. Like, the idea that we got to have more people. And so they would cut back on the rights, because if you're personally choosing to restrict the number of people, then you're harming the nation because we can't do as much, and we're going to be relying on outside sources for labor. And next thing you know, we've lost who we are. And that, you know, they can't stand that idea. So they scare people sort of like into that mode of, well, we got to support this because, yeah, you know, America first or whatever country we're talking about. Like, that's part of it, actually.
But we are also the country that for generations sterilized what we deemed to be imbeciles. We have a history of
that's true
of trying to control populations in ways that we want to occur. And believe it or not, the case that decided that sterilizing imbeciles was constitutional is still good law. It's never been explicitly overturned. And so America has a dark eugenics past.
Was that uniquely American, or was that just or Western Europe involved
no,
as well?
No, that's not uniquely.
Well, yeah, it's not uniquely American, but we have a very, it's an undercurrent, and it's been there for a very long time. And I personally worry that it can rear its ugly head very easily again.
It seems at this point, I get, because abortion is so controversial and there's so many sides to it and it's so complex, and it's been talked about for a long time, and Republicans have been pretty consistent about their stance. With contraception, it seems like it would be politically very costly to push that too hard, except in maybe certain states. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But
the midterm elections will be really interesting guidepost for that, because we're looking to see what the turnout is. We're looking to see there's been a drastic increase in the number of women registered to vote, and what should be historically a Republican wave year, where the trend is the person who won the White House, their party loses in the midterms. And right now, Democrats are closing that gap in enthusiasm and in several swing states, that it's possible that they might hold on to the Senate and still probably lose the House, but not badly. And if that is true, it might signal really bad idea for them to go further.
All right, political question to you, from me to you. There are movements inside many states that are sort of gearing themselves up to, I mean, we're putting people in positions of power who are over elections, who yes. obviously want the elections to go a certain way, and they're actually making it harder and harder to, for the transparency that needs to take place. Do you think that there will be enough states that do that by the time the election happens here? What are we, 60-something days away, something like that? Or is it less at this point? Anyway, it's not too far away.
Right.
Will they have enough legal maneuvering to, even if the election goes against them, to actually switch that and change it the way they want? Because that we talk about election rigging and all the stories and all the nonsense about how the last one was stolen and this and that. And it is nonsense, by the way. It's thoroughly proven in multiple ways by multiple people on both sides of the political spectrum and through the judicial system that was appointed by, you know, both sides. There was no validity to the idea that the last election was stolen. However, that doesn't change the idea that it might be in the future. So there is a certain vigilance that needs to take place. So again, how is that? Do you see movement on that level right now that would be impactful in the midterms?
For the midterms, I would say no. Okay. Not right now. 2024 is the bigger, and that's the bigger fish to fry, so to speak, and that's what they're going to try to go for. Some efforts have stalled, and it's been politically costly in some swing states. So we'll see. Really, I think the midterms are the litmus test, and we'll go from there.
All right. All right, come on up.
Hi, I'm Lauren Lewis, and my question is, do you think that living life to the fullest is truly possible?
To the, like, you have to define, each person has to define what that means for them, though, right? So what's too much for one person might not be near enough for somebody else.
True.
Right? So, like, can you be more specific? Like,
so let's say you have somebody who just, I guess, fills their lives with things that matter to them. Can they ever
You're talking
have
about activities, or you're talking about, like, just, you know, to live life to the fullest for some people, I need to read all of these great
Right, I
text,
guess it so, is a very...
Or are you talking about, like, I got to jump off every mountain there is in a squirrel suit and hope that I don't splat at the bottom?
What about you personally?
Okay.
Okay, so I've got some ideas on this, of course. I think also age matters, because you're what makes you happy or what you are drawn towards or is going to change as you grow. When you have children and stuff like that, that can change things on what makes you happy. But I think something universal is most of us live in the past or the future in our brains. We're thinking about the past or we're thinking about what's next. I think the best superpower in realistic terms would be to figure out a way to live in the present. Like, if you could go to class and really pay attention and live in the present, you'd make straight A's, first of all, because you would hear what, you know, instead of being 5 minutes and zoning out. And I mean, how many times have you zoned out right now? Like, just in the last 10 minutes, you zone out, you think about tomorrow, you think about yesterday, you think about what you got to do at home. I wonder what my mom's doing. I mean, imagine if you could zone in and really capture the present and live. I mean, that is the struggle, and I struggle with that too. So no matter what makes you happy, whatever you're drawn to, if you could enjoy it more, that would be, to me, living life to the fullest is being present.
That's a great answer, bro. And I will add on to that by saying, yes, yeah. How many times have you seen somebody at an event and everybody's just really enthused, but they're not looking at it and enjoying it? They're like looking at it through their phone. I've seen people do that. Just I'm looking here, but it's happening out here. And for whatever reason, whether I'm trying to video it or something, I want to watch it later. I want to save this thing. You're missing it. I mean, you're missing part of it by not actually plugging into the thing that's actually happening right now. I think that's that future tense thing. Well, I got to have it for later, or I'll want to look back on this someday. Like, yeah, dude, what's now? What's happening? Don't miss that. Honestly, the older I get, the more you realize, geez, I wish I had paid more attention at certain times in my life. I mean, I was a knucklehead teenager. I'll go ahead and admit that to you. Like, half the stuff I did, I would look back and go, God, how did we survive that? But part of that was not fully engaging with what I should have been doing. I was distracted by other things or by other people, you know? Like, cut out all the crap in your life and go be, right? Get to the root of it. What's the most important thing right now? Like, I think that's super important. So, yeah, I like your answer.
Yeah, we're not wired like that, by the way. We're wired to learn from the past, so we don't die. Think about the future so we don't die. So it is a constant struggle for all of us to be present in the moment.
Nope. Yep.
Hello, my name is TJ Caudill. And I was just wondering, if y'all were a transformer, what vehicle do you think you would transform into?
I'm trying to remember the 80s.
No one's ever asked that question. I was like 8 when I got my first transformer.
Metroplex. What was the city? Wasn't that Metroplex?
Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I was super happy when I got Metroplex.
Wait, okay, you don't have to be a thing that already has been in a show or something. Like, what? Just what if you could transform into something?
Oh, be a literal transformer from my childhood. Okay.
Yeah. Stealth fighter. I don't know. That seems
the
cool.
The asteroid that hits her.
The asteroid. Bro, you're way too hung up on that.
I'm sorry. I just...
this haircut lady really messed you
up
today.
It was a long day.
You're deeply pondering this. It's the most serious thing he's going to answer all night. I got to get the right answer on this.
Usually,
man.
I can come up with something pretty good.
I'm drunk.
It would be small, would it be something?
But you want to be small, but you want to be fast.
You transform into like
the speed of light,
the God particle.
That's a good. That's the answer. Yeah.
Well, okay. That's a tough one, man.
Yeah, I don't know what to say to that one.
Yeah, something that goes real fast. That goes back to my childhood too. Don't drive fast, kids. That right, but
they're
I'm
not going to listen.
Yeah, the adrenaline junkies.
We didn't
there.
Listen.
Yeah, we didn't. Okay, I'll tell you what's going to piss me off, boy. Just as a side tangent, like when the self driving cars come along and I can't drive the way I want to.
No steering.
I'm gonna irritate me all day long. But no.
The thought Step of back. Him giving up his smart board is about to kill him. I can't imagine.
I don't even want a smart board. I do not want a Promethean board. I just want to have, like, my board is smart enough the way it is. Like, stop trying to shove technology on me.
When they take away your car, everybody just get away.
And get people to learn and talk about stuff. All right, go, sir. Hey, speak up.
My name is Brennan Wilkins.
A little closer. Close to the mic.
Show
some seniority.
Yeah. If you had to take, like, all the best, like, poets and, like, artists of, like, human history, like Shakespeare, Robert Frost, like Dr. Seuss, like all those, like, who do you think would be the best rapper?
Dr. Seuss would be amazing. Yeah.
Is there a Dr. Seuss rap online somewhere that we could enjoy?
Epic rap battles?
There might be. Like,
isn't there, like, a new, like, Snoop Dogg kids show? Because that's pretty amazing. I think there is. Or he's just fooling everybody. It's been on his Instagram.
Isn't there an epic rap battles?
Oh, yeah, epic rap battles of history.
I would not own a boat.
I don't know. I do like epic rap battles of history. Those were pretty good. Yeah.
Dr. Seuss one. Dr. Seuss would be good.
Yeah, that's a great one.
He could have some crazy rhymes like Eminem, like in the middle of the phrase.
Mm-hmm. Let's go with that.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Up.
I'm Jack Henry Frisbee. I'm asking a very serious question. Because I've been thinking about this for a couple years now. You know, COVID, you know, it cramped my ability to ask this question.
Well, completely God bless and go Rams question. Get to
oh,
it.
Right.
So,
land the plane.
There's a boxing ring, and in one corner, you have Mike Tyson with just his left arm.
Okay.
And on the other corner is Mike Tyson, but with his right arm.
Which one of them has teeth?
Which one of them has the ear in his mouth? Yes. Right. That's what I was thinking.
Because that was
you put them together, who's winning, left or right?
Left. Left, because left's the uppercut. Oh. Left's the finisher.
No, I thought he finished with left uppercut?
Always left.
Yeah, that's it.
Body blow to the right, dude ducks down, you bust his head open with the left. People explode. Like, yeah, no. It's
Franklin has a violent streak tonight.
Left's the answer. Yeah, no, that's a good question. I hadn't thought of it that way. Mike Tyson versus Mike Tyson. Again,
I'm just
the teeth.
Concerned about which one up, has though. The ear.
Yeah, who? Yeah, which one gets to chew on the
which
other?
Which one bit the ear? Because I don't want it to be that one.
If you don't know that story, like Mike Tyson versus Evander Holyfield, in the middle of the fight, Tyson spits out his mouth guard and like just starts gnawing on Evander Holyfield's face, just spitting ear pieces out everywhere. And then they stop the fight, which was a disappointment, actually. Like. Huh? Were you there? How do you know that?
Oh, because he's coherent in interviews, yeah.
Go.
My name is Ben Hollis.
There you go.
So recently the city of Albuquerque put in statues of Walter and Jesse from Breaking Bad. Republican congressmen are upset because they think this glorifies like lawbreaking and making meth and stuff. So my question is, do you think the prevalence of violence and crimes in media actually influences real life in society?
But they're okay with Civil War statues. Anyway, you know, sorry.
It's not hatred, it's heritage.
Why did they put up the statue?
Just because it's cool. Because the show was based in Albuquerque. And so, yeah. You know the people who own the house where Walter White lived? Like, you know that people would drive by there and, like, just fling pizzas up on the roof indiscriminately? And so I think the people ended up having to move. But it's free pizza. Why would you move? Like, just go up and get it.
Is it on public property?
Where the statue's on somebody's...
I mean, aren't they just talking about the show?
Does violence in media translate to violence in society? Is that what you're asking? I think it depends on the society. You know, because if I look at, for example... Japanese culture and society, their video games and their movies are ultra violent compared to what we have. I mean, but they are, as a culture, some of the nicest people. They're so giving and so worried about social consciousness and how to help a community, especially in a time of crisis, and very worried about respectability and all that stuff. And so I think it depends on which society we're talking about. Where does it land and what do they already have a proclivity for? So does it have a negative impact on our society? Like, we can make a different argument there, right? If we're talking about just us.
I actually agree because they're a nation state. Their culture is so embedded and they're so alike and so homogenous that it does matter where you're at. And the U.S. is very different. So it's kind of a hard question. But, you know, I would really us rather be talking about mental health and the real causes of violence in society than arguing about fictional characters on statues.
Yeah, most studies show that it didn't have much of an impact. It is mental health and it's socioeconomic. Those are the two reasons that people will turn to violence or commit violence, not because they saw it.
There is an argument to be made, though, that if you have that trend in your society where people are struggling with those issues and then you add in violence in media and they're saturated that, they don't get any other viewpoint or whatever, then it could have an impact. But again, you got to sort of take that case by case. I don't know that it's provable. Matter of fact, I would think that it would be difficult to prove that it is. I hear people say that, especially older people. Well, you know, if it wasn't for the violent video games, then there would be no problems in the world, and everything would be cherries on top of ice cream like you like. Yeah, I don't buy that argument necessarily.
We've got time for about two more questions.
Oh, okay.
So,
yep.
My name is Miles Brewster, and my question is, if you were in Apocalypse, The Walking Dead style, if you may, what's your game plan?
What's our weapon of choice to survive the
zombie
apocalypse?
Would you try to survive, or would you give up, or what's...
Did you hear what I said while ago about living forever? I thought I made that clear. Yeah, I'm going to try to survive. Right? What's your weapon? What's your zombie apocalypse weapon?
It seems like walls work pretty well.
I'm following him and hoping he doesn't die. Yeah, that's the danger of my plan.
I mean, you know, it seems like people eventually become, especially if they're walking. I don't want the World War Z zombies that are sprinting across the... But if you go to The Walking Dead zombies, walls seem to work well. So you need a fortress, and you need people guarding the walls. And, you know, you can survive for a while until somebody, you know, messes up.
Well, if you watch that show long enough, you realize that the zombies aren't the biggest problem. It's the other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so that's something to consider. So the bat, yeah. I'm going full Negan on people. Yeah, sure am. All right, come on up.
Okay, what's up? I'm Emerson Foster, and my question is, if aliens visit us this year, like 2022, do you think the rich or anyone would attempt to capitalize or even tame them?
An alien? Is that what you said? Okay. Would somebody try to capitalize on that?
Or contain them? I think if they got here, we're not going to be able to contain them.
Yeah. If they got here, they're way more advanced than us.
Right.
And I use this comparison with Native Americans and the Spanish. You know, they were like, hey, who are these people? And you see it in every alien movie, right? When the aliens come down, what do humans do? Well, maybe they're okay. And then they zap us and, you know, that's the movie.
You flock to the center of the town with welcome signs. That's probably
a bad plan. And they all kill us because they're so much more advanced because we can't go anywhere. I mean, the only thing we could even hope in the next 100, 1,000 years is just exploring our little galaxy. And as far as we know, there's no life. I mean, there could be life in our galaxy, but. We can't even get out of our solar system. So if they get here, they can do whatever they want with us.
Do you think if we end up putting somebody on Mars that we actually have the ability to bring them back? Or are they just going to be like test dummies. And like, yeah. All right, well, we're going to see how long this lasts. What do you think? I mean, we're gonna try to do that, right? We're going to try to put somebody up there. They're doing the moon thing, right? Or they think they're doing the moon thing. Yeah, so it's like, and then eventually they're going to put people up there to try to...
Yeah, long-term base on the moon and then Mars.
And bounce
they say
from
like,
the moon to Mars? Is that the idea?
Yeah, six months, something like that. Okay. And then 6 months to get back.
But would you think that people would volunteer knowing that it would be... do you think there's somebody who has that sort of vision quest mentality where they go, okay, we can't bring you back, but you're going to go and you're going to learn as much as we can, and we're going to establish the knowledge base so that we can send other people later on that will survive? Do you think that could be a thing? Like, again, go back to Columbus. Like, that boy didn't know he was coming home. He wasn't sure that this was going to work out, but he went anyway. Right? The chances were highly against him that he was going to find what he was hoping to find. I mean, people had gone off in that direction before and had never been seen again. So there's lots of reasons why he might not have made it. But he went. So do you think that there'd be somebody here to be like, yeah, sign me up, bro?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think whatever it is, definitely. The first voyage will be dangerous either way. I mean, yeah. Also, nobody ever really talks about this, but if aliens could come here and they'd be so much more advanced than us, they could be here now. And because they're so much more advanced, they could keep us from detecting them. Probably. Oh. So like we think, well, there's no detections, there's no evidence. I mean, we're pretty stupid compared to them. So maybe they could, they're just walking across right now or flying in the room. We wouldn't even know it. So
that's how he's going to
live
forever. Cloak
of invisibility.
He is one.
All right. One more? Yes?
One more.
Excellent. Yeah, come on up.
Okay. I'm Emily Williams, and I know we've already decided that Franklin is immortal.
Yes.
But if you were to die, what's the worst, weirdly specific way to die?
Paper cuts?
I don't know. What
just
is
paper cuts. Multiple paper.
It's a weird thing.
What's happening? Anything that's slow.
Fear of suffocation. Like, that's...
So, if you want to talk about ways I don't want to go.
Yeah, there are a lot of those.
I have no interest in fire.
We'll put our list in.
Yeah,
don't want fire.
No fire.
Don't want suffocation.
Yeah, being trapped somewhere and having fire engulf me, that is really high on my list of things to avoid.
Also, if you know for sure you're going to die, but it's going to take a while. Just the knowledge of knowing it's coming. And I go with paper cuts once again. If you can die from paper cuts, that's a bad death. I know. I've said this before. You know, if you really let that sink in, that should be all we're thinking about. We got to live because it's going to, but we're not programmed that way. We can just go, okay, let's not talk about that. It's not going to happen today, so... Okay, just ended on a very dark note. Sorry.
Started and ended on...
Okay, we are out of time. Thanks to Collective Coffee for having us out.
Yes.
Thank you guys for having us out. We'll see y'all next round. Good. Bye.